The hour of 1 o'clock having arrived, I'll call this meeting of the House Ag Finance and Policy Committee meeting to order. We do have a quorum, and if one of the folks on the committee would take a look at the minutes, Representative Jacobs, have you had a chance to check the minutes of our last meeting?
I have, Chair Anderson. I move to approve the minutes as presented.
Any comments or objections? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same side. The minutes are approved. Another fairly busy day on the agenda. We have several bills and also a couple of presentations, so let's get right into it. We're going to be hearing, first of all, from the Rural Finance Authority folks, the RFA. Can you come up and take the table? Tell us who you are, although we probably know, and for the record, so we can get going and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, Tom Peterson, Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. But today, too, I also serve as chair for the Rural Finance Authority. You may not know, but the Rural Finance Authority is also made up of a board of farmers, lenders, other state agencies that meet monthly to discuss board business. I just also kind of want to talk about just the importance of the Rural Finance Authority that you'll see is that essentially serves as our bank for many different loan programs, 13 of them, that make a lot of important options out there for farmers partnering with local banks. A couple other things I just wanted to point out as we look at where our funding comes from, you'll see that there's GO bonds, and then there's a revolving loan program. And when we look at the bill later, that's up, Mr. Chair, your bill, we do appreciate that, because when we look at and try to figure out where we're going to run out of money at some point, right now we're projected to run out in December of 2026. So you kind of almost have to play a political game when you're thinking about where do we ask for that, and it's currently not in the governor's bonding bill or request. Which would mean that we would probably need to pass it next year at the latest, or we have had this happen before where we haven't passed it, we have to hold loans and then pass it right away at first week of session. And that's happened many times in my almost 25 years of being here. And so glad to, continue to work on that. The other thing I just want to highlight that'll be in one of Mr. McDevitt's slides, though, too, is we try to react to things that are really important. So on avian influenza, he's not in here. Let's see. Representative Burkle made a request last week or about 3 weeks ago because of avian influenza AMPV or Metapneuma virus that's affected turkeys and H5N1 to open our disaster recovery loan to allow for those loans. And there has been some interest in that. We actually changed the statute a few years ago to let the board make that decision that a disaster exists and to open that up. So I appreciate that and appreciate the support the committee's given it to us. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. McDevitt to walk through our program.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members, my name is Matt McDevitt. I'm the Ag Finance Supervisor for the Rural Finance Authority and the Agricultural Best Management Program. Okay, I'm just going to kind of move through these slides here kind of relatively quickly, so just if you just kind of follow along. If anybody has questions, feel free to chime in and ask me at any time. Okay, so RFA history established in 1986. I don't have every single program listed on here, but these are the ones that are mostly used by our group. Our goals are to help Minnesota farmers obtain affordable financing under terms and conditions not necessarily available from other credit sources. So we help local institutions. We work with the local banks. We have lower interest rates. We share risk with them, help them manage their local lending limits, and we're really easy to use and quick with our loan approvals. Commissioner Peterson mentioned how we have a fund for our loans here. So beginning farmer sale assisted, agriculture improvement, livestock expansion, restructure. These are all the bond funded loans. So that's how we use the funds with that. We have some Aggie bond loans now and again, and then our dedicated revolving account. Those are some of the programs that we use there, including the disaster is probably the one that gets mostly used out of the revolving. So bonding dollars available on the last time we had an authorization was 2023, and that was $50 million. We have about $39 million of that left right now. Loan requests have been fairly steady, even in a high interest rate environment and with the rise of land costs. So money's still moving out the door fairly steadily. But we do look to exhaust the funds by about December of 2026. So overall, we RFA has done over 4,000 loans, totaling over $417 million. We've only taken losses of just under $700,000 in that time. So that's 24 loans. It's 0.0016%. So extremely low loan loss rate. We currently have 945 active files for about $28.3 million. So I'd mentioned we participate with local lenders. So the way that works is the local lender will actually close the loan, and then we purchase 45% of it. So lender does most of the paperwork. We generally, you know, we have some of our own forms, but generally use their paperwork. They do, they lend all the money, we buy ours, and then the borrower pays the lender on a monthly, quarterly, or yearly basis, and then they pay us. So kind of beginning farmer, seller assisted. These are our most popular loans, probably about 70% of the loans that we do. So it can be bare land, farm, site, or acres. Our net worth adjusts every year, indexed for inflation. Currently, the maximum farmer can have is $1,042,000. I mentioned the 45%. We have some debt per acre. Current interest rate on that program is setting at 5%. And we adjust that every time we do a bond sale, and then just add just a little bit more than what we sold for. So people can use it more than once. We do have people enroll in farm management programs unless they have requisite skills. Just kind of an example of kind of how it might work, right? If there was a $200,000 purchase, they put maybe $40,000 down, they need $160,000, and then you can see how we kind of break it out with the 45-55. And then we do shared first, so then the blended interest rate is a lot less than if they had just gone to the lender. So we also work really well together with FSA. We have some memorandums of understanding, so they will, FSA will waive the 1% origination fee. We have a good chunk of our loans have 95% guarantees. That's part of the reason why our loan loss rate is so low, are that when there is issues, we a lot of times will get paid out by FSA. We'll do a 20-year balloon with the FSA loans. So kind of the same slide as before, just a little bit of a breakdown. As you see, the interest rates even get better because now the FSA has taken about half of it, and they're only charging 1.5%. So their blended interest rate probably ends up in a scenario like that around, you know, somewhere between 5.5 and 6. Agriculture improvement loan that's used to finance improvements to the farm, any ag-related purpose, such as livestock buildings, grain handling facilities, machine storage and manure systems, livestock expansion, it's for state-of-the-art livestock production facilities. Net worth on that program is just a little over $2,212,000. The restructure loan program that helps farmers restructure and reorganize their debt to improve their cash flow. That has the higher net worth limit on it as well. Disaster recovery loan, which we, Commissioner Peterson's touched on before, helps farmers affected by recent disasters. So we can help clean up, replace livestock or other inputs, or repair buildings or improve buildings in some cases when it comes to like some of that avian influenza and things like that. Can purchase watering systems during drought and potentially cover the loss of revenue when there's a contagious disease. So same type of 45%, although we do have a 0% interest rate on this loan, and we only require interest only the first 2 years, which is zero. No maximum net worth on that, and collateral is negotiable. So we've done 123 disaster loans, helped that many farmers over the period this loan's been available for over $9 million. Just a little snapshot of our most recent resolution. Commissioner mentioned earlier that we kind of retro-dated it back to April 1st, 2024. And then that'll last through February 24th of 2026. Livestock equipment loan helps purchase livestock-related equipment, facilities improvements. Lower interest rate on most of our revolving loans. This one's 2%. So we don't have to pay anybody back. Farm opportunity loan, used to purchase machinery and equipment to add value to livestock or crops, do some best management practices, reduce or improve management of ag inputs, increase production of on-farm energy. Value added, that's to provide financing for farmers with limited capital that want to buy stock or in a cooperative proposing to build or purchase and operating an agricultural processing facility in Minnesota. One of our newer programs, that's the Meat and Poultry Intermediary Lending Program. It's a mouthful. We got a $15 million grant from the USDA, secured late in 2022, to set up a revolving program to do direct loans, and these funds can be used to purchase land, equipment, cover startup costs, and make other business investments when it comes to small and medium-sized meat processing facilities in Minnesota. So we've done a few, we have a few that are on the books already, did full slaughter, did some slaughter processing. We did a turkey deboning or helped fund a turkey deboning facility. In process, we have one for a halal slaughter and processing in Wilmer, an expansion of a facility in Nurstrand, and a new slaughter and processing facility in Lewiston. Beginning Farmer Tax Credit. This is a separate program the RFA has been administering since 2018. So we can do tax credits for sellers, landlords and sellers that work with beginning farmers. So they can use it for farmland, livestock, facilities and machinery. Funding is limited currently to $4 million a year and is generally on a first come, first serve. There's some caveats involved with that. Tax credits, they pay out different percentages depending on rental, share crop, or sales of land. And there's also some maximum amounts that people can claim for tax credits. And we also do farm business management tuition reimbursement of up to $1,500. And farmers can apply for that for up to 3 years. It can be a part of this or it can be completely separate to do that. Eligibility, resident of Minnesota, farming the last 10 years. Land sales are can be direct family members. Net worth on that is set at $1,042,000 and does the majority of the labor on the farm. Funding's limited, $4 million. Currently sunsets 2013. The budget for this program was cut for 2025, about 40%. So, and also eliminated rollover funds, which we previously, they were unused funds rolled over. Funding by year, you can see what was available and what was requested. As you see in 2024, $4 million was available, but requested was $6.5 million. And we issued the $4 million. So there probably would have been a lot more requested, but at some point people just stopped sending in applications. They knew the funding was exhausted. We also have the Down Payment Assistance Grant developed in 2023. That's a $15,000 grant for first-time land buyers. So we currently do that via a lottery. And applicants must earn less than $100,000 in gross farm sales or grow cannabis, industrial hemp, or specialty crops. So we have so far supported 96 farmers by land. So that's been great to help them out and continuously funded at the rate of $750,000 annually. The type of farms we have done, this little graphic here, and where they're located, fairly spread out around the state. Row crop being the biggest and specialty crop second biggest as far as types of operations. Agricultural Best Management Program, that was established in 1995 to provide financing to encourage farmers and landowners to implement projects or practices that prevent, reduce, or eliminate environmental pollution. So the way this works is we work closely with lenders and local government units and borrowers to run this revolving fund program. And generally speaking, eligible products must be solely are funded to assist water quality. And the borrower can be a little bit varied. It can be farm supply businesses, water quality cooperatives, and we do see quite a few septic-related projects. Maximum $200,000 loan, 10-year loan maximum. We lend this money out at 0%. However, we allow the banks or the local government units that administer the program to charge up to 3% plus any customary fees. So total loans we've done in this program, quite a few, 19,380. Total loans, over $373 million. We currently have a corpus of $102 million. And overall funding leverage, so you know we don't always necessarily cover an entire project, but total projects covered to do through all these loans we've done is $461 million. We have had zero defaults. The banks are required to guarantee payback. So we've done good with the use of our money. Loans by year, you can see this graph. It kind of bounces around a lot depending on funding available, just current economic environment. So we currently use all our money that we have available on a yearly basis the last few years. So just kind of by category breakdown, just kind of take a glance at this. You know, ag waste management is the largest amount by percentage, but number of loans, it's septics. That's the whole since 1995 through February 2025. Last 12 months doesn't vary a whole lot, but that's kind of what it looks like in the last year. And loan available funding currently is $32 million. All this money is spoken for. These are just projects yet to be completed. Past 2 years, we've had requests in 2024 for $54.2 million and 2023, $46.4 million. So we've had a pretty good shortfall. So we just kind of parse that out by giving every county a budget and allow them to decide where to move the money as far as their priorities go. So projected funding shortfall for this year is for fiscal year 26, sorry, for 26 and 27. Is just under $40 million. And I can stand for questions.
I'll take the first, Mr. McDevitt. If you would go back to the down payment assisted grants, you were discussing the types of farms that were using the grant program. Priority given to growing marijuana, hemp, and specialty crops. And I thought you said a large category was row crops. Did I hear correctly? What would be row crops that would fall under?
Sure, Mr. Chair, members. That's still going to be generally speaking, your corn or soybean.
So despite the fact the priority is given to those other three categories, most of your loans are going to row crop type farming operations?
Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? If not, thank you for the testimony. Very good numbers, and we thank you for that. Next up, I have a bill that pertains to the same topic.
All right, our next item up for business is House File 770. Chair Anderson, would you like to move your bill?
Madam Chair, yes, I'd like to move House File 770.
Thank you. Chair Anderson moves that House File 770 be re-referred to the Committee on Capital Investment. Chair Anderson has the A1 amendment. Chair Anderson, would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, again, I'd like to move the A1 amendment, which corrects one of the typos we found in the bill.
Chair Anderson moves the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion to the amendment? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Anderson, for bringing this bill forward. Members, I have talked to both Chair Hansen and Chair Anderson that support the amendment and the forthcoming oral amendment. Thank you, Chair Anderson.
All right, any other discussion? Hearing not, all those in favor of the A1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. There is also an oral amendment.
Madam Chair, yes, I have an oral amendment. And again, Chair Lee, I would beg your indulgence. Again, there were a couple of typos in the bill. We caught one, didn't catch the other. It's on page 1, line 21. And that is a figure that goes to the cost of issuing bonds, and it doesn't need to be $30 million, as it says. We got them down to $30,000, so that's good news. So, Madam Chair, I'd like to amend line 121 to change that $30 million figure to $30,000.
Thank you. And House Research will repeat the oral amendment.
Chair members, the amendment would be page 1, line 21, delete $30 million and insert $30,000.
Thank you. Is there any discussion to the oral amendment? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I encourage your support for this.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all of those in favor of the oral amendment say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. And the motion prevails and the oral amendment is adopted. Chair Anderson, please present your bill as amended.
Madam Chair, thank you. No need to say much more on this. We heard the presentation from the RFA folks. It's a tremendous program the state of Minnesota has. It's kind of like our state bank, and it can provide a lot of needed help for buying down interest rates, and especially in this time, this economic time, well, we appreciate the work they do, and we don't want to see them at all running short. So although they don't need money for a while yet, about a year, we thought it was smart to move this bill now and have the funds available for when they need them down the road. So, Madam Chair, I would ask for support for this bill.
Thank you. We do have testifiers on this bill. The first on the list here is Matt Hardy from the Rust Hill Ranch. Please come to the table, state your name, and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Matt Hardy. On behalf of myself and the Minnesota Farmers Union, who invited me today, I'm glad to share my support for Chair Anderson's bill to authorize new bonding authority for the RFA. I own and operate Rust Hill Ranch in Chisago County. We raise livestock on pasture and in the forest. We raise pigs, chickens, cattle, and sheep. Our family started our operation 4 years ago, inspired by my wife's growing up on a farm, as well as our desire to provide wholesome food to our community and the surrounding region. I'm here today to share my support for additional bonding authority for the RFA because their beginning farmer loan program, which was one of the items on the slideshow, helped me purchase my own farm. At the time, our operation was new enough that we actually didn't qualify for the federal beginning farmer loans through the FSA. There was a certain experience requirement of 3 years, and we didn't quite have that under our belt. And the RFA beginning farmer loan program helped us kind of fill the gap there. After I participated in the Farm Business Management Program to sort of get our financial feet under us, the Beginning Farmer Program helped us purchase 40 acres and realize our dream of owning our own family farm. Not only did this program help me get started, it's continued to save me money along the way to reinvest in my operation through those interest rate savings. That lower interest rate I was able to lock in with the help of RFA saves me enough interest each month, for example, to purchase 1 ton of hog feed. This program also helped me connect with a community bank, which at the time was the only one listed on the directory of participating lenders. So it was good marketing for them and a good connection for us. And by partnering with that financial institution in our own neighborhood, it helps stay in line with our goal of serving our local community and boosting our local economy. I'm grateful that Minnesota has programs that meet the specific needs of farmers like me, with accessible, supportive staff and partners as well. So thank you for the opportunity to share my experience with RFA programs, and I hope this bill earns your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hardy. Do members have any questions for our testifier? All right, CNN, thank you. Our next testifier is Hunter Peterson, Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation. Please come to the table, provide your name, and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Hunter Peterson, Minnesota Farm Bureau. On behalf of our 31,000 family farm and ranch members, thank you for the opportunity to share our support for House File 770, a bill to replenish the Rural Finance Authority bond-funded account. Minnesota Farm Bureau supports funding for the Rural Finance Authority. The RFA plays a critical role in ensuring that farmers, especially beginning farmers and those facing financial distress, have access to the capital they need to establish and sustain their operations. By providing affordable and flexible low-interest loan programs, the RFA supports not only individual farmers, but also the broader agricultural economy. The RFA's loan programs, including the Beginning Farmer Loan Program and Restructuring Loan Program, have proven to be invaluable tools in keeping family farms in operation. These programs help new farmers enter the industry and assist existing farmers in navigating financial hardship, ultimately contributing to rural economic stability. Continued investment in the RFA is not just an investment in individual farms or farmers, it is an investment in the economic health of our rural communities. So I appreciate Chair Anderson's bipartisan leadership bringing this bill forward, and I ask for the committee's support. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Any questions from members for our testifier? Seeing none. All right. Thank you. Is there anyone here in the audience who would like to testify for or against House File 770 as amended? Okay, not seeing any. Okay, discussion on House File 770 as amended. Any members have questions for Chair Anderson? I am not seeing any. Chair Anderson, do you have concluding comments on your bill?
Madam Chair, appreciate the support from all members today. And I would ask that we pass House File 770 and have it be referred to the Capital Investment Committee.
All right, Chair Anderson renews his motion that House File 770 be referred as amended to the Committee on Capital Investment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Our next item of business is House File 857. Representative Nelson, please make your way to the testifying table and move your bill.
Keep these two guys from fighting.
Representative Nelson, would you care to move your bill?
Yes, I would like to move House File 857 before the committee. This is a bill of funding for Agriculture and Utilization Research Institute.
And carry on, talk about your bill, and you have a couple of testifiers, I see.
Okay, so this bill is funding the AURI. It's an institute that it's was founded in 1989. They've just recently had their 35th anniversary of celebrating the research and increasing the value and opportunity of farm products across rural Minnesota. This adds value in our communities and really does a great service. I've toured, two of the three sites. I don't know if I've been up in Crookston yet, but it's a great opportunity to see the research and what can happen, with a product and just not having just a raw product, but taking and doing something with it, making it a greater, increasing the value of it. So with that, I would encourage all the members, when you have a chance, to take a tour of AURI, and see the products that are coming in, whether they're raw or whatever it is, and they're transforming it and adding value back. It's to our farms, to our communities, and it's very beneficial.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Any questions from members to either Chair Nelson or either of his two testifiers? Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, can you tell me what's the increase? How much is the increase from the base?
Representative Nelson.
I think I'll have the nonpartisan Mr. Savory defer to him.
Mr. Savory, go ahead.
Chair and members, the base for each fiscal year in 26 and 27 is $4,343,000. So this bill would increase appropriations each year by $175,000. So a total of $350,000 over the biennium. And there's no language in the proposed bill that makes this a one-time increase. So those $350,000 would carry into the next biennium in 28 and 29.
Representative Vang. No further question. I would add that that's about a 4% increase over the 2 years of the biennium. In the governor's budget request, he had a 2% figure in his request for an increase for AURI. Any other questions from members? Seeing none, do either one of your testifiers want to add anything?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'll be rather brief. I just want to take this.
Mr. Sparks, go ahead.
Yep. For the record, my name is Dan Sparks, Director of Government and Industry Relations with Ag Utilization Research Institute. Want to thank you and your staff for the opportunity to testify briefly here this afternoon. We appreciate the opportunity. A few weeks ago, we were here with my executive director and our board chair to give you a more detailed update on AURI activities in the past year and successes that we've had. So with that, I would just like to thank, obviously, Representative Nelson, our chief author of this funding request for the next 2 years. Also, the co-authors, Representative Frederick, for his strong support, and as well as you, Mr. Chair, we appreciate you signing on the bill. In members' packets, too, just because of time today, we do have letters of support from both the Minnesota Farmers Union and the Farm Bureau. We're very appreciative of their continued support. They're a key stakeholder of ours, and we really appreciate their support. And lastly, I just would like to add, too, that we appreciate the great working relationship that we have with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, their entire staff, and it's been a pleasure to work together alongside with them to move many of these initiatives forward. And so with that, Mr. Chair, if it's okay with you, I would like to turn it over to our Executive Director, Shannon Schlecht, and then obviously we'll be available to answer questions or comments that you or the members of the committee may have.
Very good. Mr. Schlecht.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Shannon Schlecht. I'm the Executive Director of AURI. And I just, first of all, just want to thank you for your past and ongoing support of the organization and the work that we do to advance value-added agriculture. As Representative Nelson mentioned, we've been in existence for 35 years, formed in 1989, to really look at how can we transform the commodities and agricultural products produced here into new business opportunities and creating new markets. So we are asking, as was mentioned, for an increase to offset rising costs, to maintain competitive salaries, rising rental costs and operational costs that equate to 4% for the biennium or would equate to roughly 2% per year an annual increase for our organization to continue our programs and driving impact for Minnesota agriculture. It means a lot in terms of the work that we do to try to reach as many Minnesota businesses as possible to help support their ideas and commercialization. We worked on over 200 projects last year with Minnesota businesses through initiatives, through our stakeholders, right through client projects. And then we consult with dozens more each year to provide them information that never turn into projects, but that we're there to lend that helping hand and provide information to help them move those ideas forward, as well as provide educational opportunities around new market opportunities. We've continued to show a strong return to the state for the dollars that you invest in us. Over this last fiscal year, it was about a 45-to-1 return in terms of new capital sales, new capital investment, and jobs created and retained that we're doing to help drive new opportunities for the agricultural sector. So we're very proud of the work that we do. We're really grateful for the partnership of the Minnesota Legislature as our key stakeholder, and I just appreciate your consideration of this request.
Thank you, Mr. Schlecht. Anybody in the audience who would care to testify or comment on this this bill? Seeing none, I would just add that in this time of depressed commodity prices, it's more important than ever to add value to what farmers produce. And your organization does an excellent job with that. So thank you for your work with agriculture and trying to get some value-added products that we can all benefit from. So thanks for that. Representative Nelson, any closing comments?
No, other than I thank you for this opportunity, and I would I think it's a great organization. You know, we've seen a 45-1, you know, return on investment in this. It's great for our communities to be able to have this added opportunity, added value in our communities, and I would just ask for your support.
With that, this bill is going to be held over. So congratulations, Representative Nelson, and thanks to our testifiers.
Thank you.
Next up is Representative Gander as he makes his way.
Okay.
Yeah. Shouldn't have said everything that first time, but anyway. Representative Gander, new to the Ag Committee, we appreciate your knowledge here, and let's hear about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Anderson, members, I would like to move House File 38. And House File 38, as you know, it matches the governor's request for the same agency. So it'll be of a lower dollar amount. We're basically hoping to create a marker for that other dollar amount. I will say, for the record, I prefer the higher dollar amount. But if it does come to that, we want to have this already approved in advance. So the two amounts here would be the $4,388,000 in fiscal year 2026, $4,434,000 in 27, and that is the 2% increase as recommended by the governor. You know, I'm going to admit that I didn't know we had this lengthy presentation by AURI before, and stuff's coming by. They say to be a new rep, it's like drinking from a fire hose. It's very much like that. And so I went back to your website, and thank you so much, Mark, for giving me the information I needed to dig in a little bit. AURI, I think one thing we haven't talked about yet about AURI is to anyone out there who has agriculture in your background and an entrepreneurial spirit, I'm talking to you right now. If you don't know where to go with your good ideas, this is a good place to go. These folks have just a whole system in place for taking your concepts into actual workable plans that can grow the market for ag commodities, creating products that we need. I was reminded of a fellow named Dr. George Washington Carver. You probably know about him. He came up with 300 uses for the peanut, and including shaving cream, shampoo, and wood stain, and plastics. So, I mean, AURI, just the sky is the limit to what can happen with these agricultural commodities. What can they be turned into? And so what a privilege to think about being able to fund an organization that's facilitating that. I know they had like a 45-1 thing, but we're talking about less than $5 million, and they're planning to deliver $500 million in economic activity by 2026. So that's a really good return on investment, and I would ask for your approval.
Representative Gander, thank you for the information. And I'd be remiss if I didn't remind you, as a new member, your first committee hearing. Congratulations on that. Do we see any treats around?
Mr. Chair, there's a large platter of cookies back in the corner, and they're for everyone in the House.
Well, let's have one of our pages, unless it's too big to pass around, but it's a tradition. Thank you much, Representative Gander.
My pleasure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Anything? I wonder if our testifiers have anything else to add, Mr. Chair?
I will ask them. Mr. Sparks or Mr. Schleck, go ahead.
Yeah, so Shannon Schlettigan, Executive Director at AURI. Some excellent points around like all the different things we can do with these different commodities with that entrepreneurial and innovative spirit that we know exists across the state of Minnesota. I think of our 35 staff are out having conversations with entrepreneurs, with producers, with businesses, cooperatives every day, and it is just really exciting for us to see that when we have discussions around what is possible and think about the role that we can play to look at both the business case and the technical side of marrying those two things together to see if there's a true business opportunity. And it's again, I don't see organizations like ARI outside of the state of Minnesota. It was a really great foresight in terms of thinking about how can we support our agriculture community in a different manner. And we just really, again, appreciate the support.
And Mr. Spark?
No, I would just say the same thing, that we appreciated being included in the governor's budget. It wasn't a full request, but we understand the challenges on the budget, but we're grateful that he did include some money in there, and obviously we'll work with you through the process to see which bill can move forward in the best manner.
Final comments, Representative Gander.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for your time today.
Very good. So with that, House File 38 is being held over. Thank you very much. Next up is as the cookies are being passed around, we again say thanks to Representative Gander. Presentation from the Department of Ag on the Agriculture Growth Research and Innovation, the Agri Grant Program. Welcome. As you get set up and deliver your presentation, we appreciate you being here. Identify yourselves and go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Paul Huguenin, and I'm the Director of the Ag Marketing and Development Division at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. My plan is I'll work through this PowerPoint presentation promptly and then hopefully save time for questions. That's where my Assistant Director, Ashley Bress, can answer all the tough questions and comments. One thing I want to note is that our full legislative report on Agri is in front of all of you, and we'll spend a little bit of time at the end of this presentation to kind of walk through some of the highlights of that and help you use that to your maximum benefit. I know there are a number of you on this committee that are either new or relatively new to this committee, and so just a little bit of historical context on the Agri program. Obviously, Minnesota has always been a leader in the area of biofuels and ethanol. And about the time the ethanol mandate was passed in Minnesota, that was paired with producer payments to help start the ethanol plants that you see in Minnesota today. Those payments were scheduled over a 10-year period when a plant became operational. That was roughly, I want to say, averaged of something like $20 million a year. Well, as those 10-year payments neared their sunsets, the legislature and stakeholders and the administration at the time worked together to find a way to keep that money being invested in agriculture and agricultural processing. And so in 2009, the legislature created the Agri program, and then the first funds rolled into that program in fiscal year 2013. Thought it'd be helpful just to take a look at kind of the funding levels for Agri over the last decade or so. You can kind of see how that pattern has worked. Just the note that in this current fiscal year of 25, you see that 27 plus million dollars. Just a note that includes $4 million for dairy with an I. So really the traditional Agri portion of that budget this biennium is just over $23 million a year. And then you can see where that base number drops to 17.5 in the out years starting next year in the base. I assure you I'm not going to read all of these programs, just to note that there are 16 different programs funded out of the Agri program. Most of them are competitive grants. Others, like the bioincentive program, are payments based on a company hitting certain statutory requirements. And I know Representative Anderson has a bill on the bioincentive program that will follow here this afternoon. When you look at Agri is a mixture of both designated funding for specific programs as well as undesignated funds that can be used for other programs that are either generally authorized in statute or specifically authorized in the Agri rider. This slide is the specific earmarks or designated funding for this current fiscal year 25. Those total $21.66 million. So if you look at the total appropriation, you take away the designated spending, that leaves us with about $5.8 million of undesignated spending for basically everything else. And those programs are listed under there. And I want to call your attention to some pretty important traditionally funded programs in Agri, like the Livestock Investment Grant Program, the Value-Added Grants, their Farm Business Management Scholarships for beginning farmers, and then things like the Sustainable Ag Development Grants as well. Those of you who have been on this committee before have heard a combination of our commissioners and staff people like me talk about the value and the importance of the flexibility that you authorize in the form of those undesignated spending funds. And there's a couple of reasons that that's so important. One is that in any given year, it's impossible to know how many applications we're going to get, how what the quality of those applications will be, as well as what industry trends and needs are. And those vary from year to year. And so to have that flexibility to make sure that we are truly funding the best, highest priority projects is really helpful. It also allows us to respond to emerging needs. And the two examples on this slide are the PROTECT grants and the PREPARE grants. I'll talk a little bit more about each of those in a moment. And then the last reason for that is there are times when the federal government will have opportunities that we can take advantage of by using agri funds to leverage or match that. Several years ago, we took advantage of the opportunity to land several million dollars for biofuel infrastructure projects. And we're still hoping that we may have the opportunity to do something similar with the Local Food for Schools program. You all heard a presentation from the legislative auditor last week, so I'm not going to repeat that, but just want to emphasize the fact that we really take our role as being stewards of the public tax dollars. We take that very seriously. And so on this slide, it's talking about some of the ways that we exceed Office of Grants Management standards. That's really important for us. And so, you know, looking back at what the auditor had to say last week, the one thing on that slide that I would highlight is the phrase about $14.5 million of payments is what the auditor reviewed. And out of that, there was only 0.1% that they said we should go and reclaim. So we're really proud of that, but that comes from going above and beyond what the current requirements are. The title of this slide changed a little bit. Where did it go? One thing I wanted to talk about is kind of service and providing service to producers. And what I was going to say is that originally I was going to have a slide that was called customer service. And one thing the OLA doesn't like is when we use phrases like customers and partners to talk about grantees. And so, but we also want to emphasize the fact that we know that we're working with farmers. We're working with small entrepreneurs, and we work really, really hard to make what can be a complex system as easy to navigate as possible. Farmers generally are not grant writers. That's not their favorite activity in the world to do, so we try to provide as much feedback as we can, and we try to make that process as seamless as possible. A couple of other interesting or unique things about agri grants are that we have the ability to do 3-year grants, and that's important, that's necessary. Things like the livestock investment grants, where people are building, in many cases, a new barn or a new hog facility. Those take time to do. We do research through sustainable ag demonstration grants or the crop research grants. And so we have the ability to do three-year grants on those projects. We also have a number of small grants. A lot of our grants are in the more of $10,000 to $25,000 range. And so, you know, one of the things that we talk about is it takes about as much time to do to administer a small grant as it does to do some of the larger grants. You heard in the budget overview that the commissioners presented, one of the things in the governor's budget is a request to increase our allowable admin from up to 6.5% to up to 7.5%. Really, that's an acknowledgement of the increasing requirements that we're seeing from OGM, as well as some of the bills moving this year, as well as the fact that we really, we've always exceeded those requirements, and we really try to work closely with our farmers and processors to help them navigate the system. So as much as we'd like to walk through all of our grant programs, I just picked a couple today to highlight that I think illustrate kind of our approach to agri grants. The first one is the Agri Protecting Livestock Grants, which we just call the PROTECT grants. This was not a designated program. It actually is in this fiscal year, but it didn't start out that way. And I think that's important to note, is that we created this program out of undesignated funds. Partially it started, we were at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, and one of the things they were talking about was what would happen if something like bovine tuberculosis were to come back. Well, it would basically stop the movement of cattle unless they were able to do a really effective electronic ID system. And so we were listening to that conversation at a national level, talking to our state producers that were there, And then we coupled that with the other things that are going on, chronic wasting disease, the fear of African swine fever, and, of course, you've heard a lot about high path avian influenza. And so Protect was really came out of that environment and a desire to help farmers proactively take steps that could help them be prepared and to help hopefully mitigate the spread of those diseases. That's become a really popular program. In fiscal 24, we had 127 requests for nearly $1 million, of which we could fund just short of $400,000. The second program I wanted to mention that also came out of undesignated funds is what we call the Prepare Grant, or Preparing for Extreme Weather. It was our administration. We administered about $8 million of drought relief a couple years ago after that severe drought. And as we did that, we were looking at all the things that farmers were requesting to respond to the drought. Things like irrigation systems, water handling equipment, livestock ponds, dredging of livestock ponds, portable fencing so that livestock producers could fence in land that they could graze that they normally wouldn't have access to or they wouldn't need to graze. And so what we thought would make sense is rather than only doing those things in response to a disaster like that, let's make funds available to farmers proactively so that they can make those investments prior to the next drought or flood or the next hailstorm. One of the things that's eligible in this grant is hail netting, for example, so that farmers can protect the highest value apples that they have. That has also turned out to be an extremely popular grant. We had over $1.5 million in requests last year, and we're able to award just under $500,000. The last program I just want to highlight briefly is the value-added grant and the meat, poultry, egg, and milk processing grants. And those are programs that really recognize the need for the state to invest in infrastructure so that farmers have places to process, whether that's their livestock or whether it's grain or other specialty crops. So investing in equipment. And I want to mention kind of how we collaborate with our friends at AURI, who you just heard from. And this is a grant program that really works seamlessly with AURI. So they are able to do things that obviously we can't do in terms of technical assistance, helping people with nutritional content, recipe development, identifying what equipment they need, et cetera. Well, we're able to fund that equipment. And so we work really closely together. We use AURI staff as external reviewers on our grant applications so that we're coordinating, collaborating, and hopefully being as efficient as possible with state dollars in general. So I just want to transition a little bit to the report that you have in front of you. One of the things that you'll see on page 16 is a grantee spotlight. We've tried to highlight, in addition to giving the big kind of the macro numbers, we try to highlight some of those more stories and make them a little bit personal so that you can actually see what this looks like. The one that I put in the PowerPoint is actually a constituent that I believe in is in Representative Burkle's district, but it's a potato producer who was able to purchase equipment that will help them grade potatoes, increase the quality and volume of potatoes that they're able to move through that operation. So in the report, you'll see some grantee spotlights kind of woven throughout the different grant programs.
Tahika, in just a second, we've had a snafu with our internet service here. So this, what he's talking about now is on page 8 of the packet. So interesting information. So if you want to follow along, this is on page 8. So go ahead.
Wonderful. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the grantee spotlights are woven through that report. And the other thing that we try to do is whenever possible, we want you as legislators to be able to see who in your district is taking advantage of these projects. We want you to be able to see where is this money going, what kinds of projects are being funded, who's receiving them. So basically then in the full legislative report on page 25, you'll see a list of livestock investment grant recipients in the last fiscal year. And in the PowerPoint, I just took the first page of that, partially because that gets you legislative districts 1 through 15B. And so Representatives Burkle, Representative Gander, Chair Anderson, and Representative Nelson, all of you have projects just on that first page. And one of the things I would encourage all of the members to do is take a look through that report, look at the maps, look at the lists, identify people in your district who've participated in these programs. Reach out to them. Ask them how it's worked for them, what their feedback is on our staff. We love to hear comments like that, but it's a way that you can connect as well with your constituents. And we also have previous fiscal years available as well if you want to see lists of those folks. On page 28 of the full legislative report is, we try to make things as visual as possible whenever we can. So that is a visual map of the state of Minnesota showing all of the livestock investment grants from fiscal year 24. So that at a glance, you can see where are those projects, what species of animals they are. And then something that we started to do a couple of years ago was let's do more than just one year at a time. So on page 29 of the ledge report, that's all of the livestock investment grants from fiscal year 17 through fiscal year 24. And it gives you an idea of kind of the how that money gets dispersed around the state of Minnesota. It's also pretty easy to at a glance, you can see the concentration of, you know, you can visualize where the dairy concentrations are, where the beef concentration or the pork concentrations are. So again, we really encourage you to spend some time with that report. Ask questions. We're always happy to provide additional information. We appreciate the opportunity to be here today. We always love the opportunity to come and talk about Agri and to share what kinds of things we're doing with that program and how the money is being spent. And with that, Mr. Chair and members, we would certainly welcome any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Huguenin. Questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Huguenin. So this applies across several grants, but let's say you get the grant and do the project, whether it's a livestock investment or meat processing or anything, and then something happens in 2 or 3 years. Maybe you're bought by a larger competitor. Maybe the business fails. Maybe you change structure or there's a ownership change. How do you deal with each of those? Is there any obligation for the grant recipient on informing the agency back of what's happened?
Mr. Huguenin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, that's a really good question. So the short answer is that is okay. For example, one of the things that we know we are doing is putting businesses in a position where they can transition and where a business is viable for the next generation, whether that be in the family or outside the family. And I would say meat processing plants and butcher shops are a great example of that, where it's so important to keep those businesses in the communities. And so we know that there are times when we have owners who are using our program to invest in the plant, and then at some point in the not too distant future, either a family member or employee or someone else is going to take over that business. I think one of the things is we don't make any attempt to, for example, like we're certainly not going to try to claw that money back. Our point in setting up this program is to make investments in infrastructure that enable those to be viable businesses for the long term, whether that's by the current owner or the next owner.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate that passing off to the next generation. What I'm concerned about is, do we make the investment and then they're purchased and closed down, maybe in an anti-competitive nature, and the equipment is sold off or not used? So is there any, I'm not talking about clawback, but is there any requirement? So like with a soil and water conservation district contract, you've got to have like, we will maintain this for 10 years. It's a contract. Is there anything on, and maybe it varies by the different types of grants, but is there anything that says, okay, we're just not, where they notify you that they're not doing it anymore, or something else has happened?
Mr. Huguenin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen. So, no, we don't have a provision like that where they are required to notify us. One thing that I would say is what we try to do is vet those on the front end as much as possible. So these are very competitive grants. We use external review committees. And what we're looking for in these grants is that ability to clearly identify how this fits into their long-term business plan. And at a, there's a point where when, say, a value-added grant application, if they hit 100,000 in requests, they're required to provide us with a business plan in order to be considered. And so I guess the best way I could answer that is to say that our emphasis is to vet those on the front end to verify that this is an ongoing, a long-term vision that they're executing.
Final. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I believe 2 years ago you did some look back on some of these. It would be interesting, go to the sustainable ag grants. I think you have a history back 40 years. You know, that's a couple generations, maybe even three generations potentially. You know, did it make a difference? Do these grants make a difference? Is the barn that we invested in still occupied? So I think having some piece of evaluation, I'm not talking a burdensome one, but some type of notification or evaluation to see in the long run were they effective, so the outcome is not just the expenditure but the sustainability of the business or the farm, whether it's to the current owner or to the next generation.
Comment, Mr. Huguenin?
Yes, thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks for the comment, Representative Hansen. We did, a couple of years ago, we did a follow-up survey where we took several of our programs and we looked back several years, and then we reached out, we surveyed all those folks. We hired a third party to do that. And, you know, just a couple of the highlights, the 89% of the people that responded to that said that as a result of the project, it was able to, they were able to increase their gross revenue. So we do try to do that. It's expensive to do that well, but we really do value that and try to make sure that we can show results and that we know long-term this makes a difference.
No further questions. I think there's something similar to that in the down payment assistance grant program. As I recall, it's $15,000 over 5 years, and if somebody exits farming after 2 years, they're to repay the remaining 3 years of that $9,000 of the grant. And if they can, wonderful, but I often wonder if they've left the business or gone bankrupt, how do they repay that money owed back to the state? So it's a good question, good comment. And in the case of a barn that sits empty after a few years, you know, so many things can happen. Somebody could have an accident, you know, lose an arm or something like that. And so things change. And I think it just probably goes with the territory that some of these things change over the length of time. And we do the best we can to vet those and to do it as wisely as you can. So thank you. Any other comments from members on the committee? If not, moving along pretty well. A couple more bills we have to get to. And again, we'll play musical chairs.
All right, the next item of business is House File 1500. Chair Anderson, please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 1500 to be laid over in the committee.
Chair Anderson moves House File 1500 to be put before the committee. Chair Anderson, please present your bill.
Again, thanks, Madam Chair. House File 1500 is one of the, say, at least complicated in terms of making a change in bill language. It just adds one word on page 1, line 12. It adds the word advanced to further clarify the type of biofuels that we're discussing here in this advanced biofuels situation in the program. So that's what the bill does, Madam Chair. And I think we have a couple of testifiers.
I have Brian Werner from Minnesota Biofuels Association. Please state your name and proceed. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brian Werner. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Biofuels Association. We'd like to thank the chair for bringing this bill forward. We support House File 1500, which would make a simple one-word technical correction to the statute for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture's bioincentive program and restore the program's legislative intent. First, I want to start by defining advanced biofuel. It's a renewable fuel with at least 50% lower greenhouse gas emissions on a life cycle basis than petroleum. Many of our members have made the necessary investments to begin producing corn kernel fiber ethanol by using special yeasts and enzymes during fermentation that generate ethanol from the fiber in the kernel of corn rather than the sugars in the starch. This type of biofuel reduces greenhouse gas emissions by 70% compared to petroleum and therefore qualifies as an advanced biofuel. The bioincentive program provides performance-based payments to producers of these advanced biofuels as well as renewable chemicals and biomass thermal energy. To qualify for the program, a producer must have expanded or retrofitted their existing capacity to specifically produce advanced biofuel. They must be located in Minnesota and source 80% of the biomass from within the state. And they must not have produced more than 23,750 MMBTU of advanced biofuel before 2015, which equates to a 1.24 million gallons per year. When this program was established, the production cap was put in place to ensure that only new and additional production of advanced biofuel would qualify. It was never meant to apply to existing production. So we need this. Why do we need this fix? Several ethanol plants in Minnesota have applied to participate in the program, but because of a drafting error in the amendment adopted in 2023, have been denied by the department because of the word advanced was accidentally removed from the definition of biofuel in the statute. This has created a situation where applications from previously eligible plants are being denied because the production cap is being interpreted to apply to overall biofuel production rather than advanced biofuel production. Without correction, it is very likely that no new advanced biofuel production plants will be allowed into the program going forward, which was not the intent of the 2023 amendment. This is a simple bill, and we would urge you to adopt it.
Thank you, Mr. Warner. Are there any questions from members for our testifier? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The simple bills are the ones that worry me the most. Just a one-word change can make a difference in terms of putting the state on the hook for things. So, we've had this program for 10 years for the incentives. Where is the product? What do we have after 10 years?
Oh, thank you, Representative Hansen. Who would have the answer to that question? Chair Anderson or Mr.
I would hope Mr. Werner does.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, when you say who has the product, maybe I'm misunderstanding the question.
No, what is the product? What do we have to show for the public investment over these years? What?
So, Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, 70% fewer greenhouse gas emissions in the ethanol that's blended into gasoline.
Madam Chair?
Representative Hansen?
And is that modeling or is that monitoring?
Mr. Warner?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, that is based on the life cycle modeling. Okay.
Representative Hansen?
Nope, that's it.
Further questions from members? Seeing none, thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who would wish to testify for or against House File 1500? I'm not seeing any. Also, members, there is a letter in your packet from Bioeconomy Coalition of Minnesota on this bill for you to review. Okay, discussion from members. Any discussion from members on the bill? Seeing none. Chair Anderson, do you have concluding comments on your bill?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. This bill adds one word advanced to describe biofuel production. And as I understand, you know, ethanol made from corn starch is not to be included in the, it's not advanced biofuel. And unless this change is made, the entire production of a plant is utilized when figuring their output. And because of that, these plants are excluded from taking part in this program. So with that, Madam Chair, I would encourage support for the bill, and I believe it's going to be laid over. So that would be my closing statement.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. House File 1500 is laid over and will be considered for possible inclusion in a budget bill. The next item of business is House File 43. Chair Anderson, please move your bill.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 43 again to be laid over in this committee.
Chair Anderson moves House File 43 to put it before the committee. Chair Anderson has the A1 amendment. Chair Anderson, would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A1 amendment. And what it does on line 1.12, it changes the number 15 retail dispensing sites to 20 retail dispensing sites.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Chair Anderson moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that he would like to present to the committee. Is there any discussion on the A1 amendment? Members have any? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Chair Anderson, please present your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a biofuel infrastructure grant program, and its intent is to encourage the use, more widespread use of E15 or 88 octane fuel in the vehicles used here in the state. And I've been a long supporter of it. To me, it's a win-win situation. It's a cheaper fuel and it has higher octane, so it's a better fuel. And it also reduces greenhouse gas emissions. And I think the corn growers came up with some numbers here, at least I heard them from corn growers. In the average month in 2024, the usage of ethanol, or E15, I should say, E15 ethanol in gasoline, averaged just under 12 million gallons a month, 11.825 per month. And the average savings with E15, around my place, it's about 15 cents, but they said the statewide average was 16 cents a gallon in savings. So doing the math, that's a monthly savings to residents of Minnesota of nearly $1.9 million per month in savings from using regular gas, which is E10, and moving up to E15 at that 16 cents savings, and annually, it amounts for the year 2024 about $22.7 million less that we all paid for gasoline in the state by utilizing E15. So to me, it's a very good program. And this grant program has been in effect since 1921. And to date, about $9.5 million has been funded in the program. And that has also caused a lot of private investment in upgrading fueling stations, tanks, pumps, that type of thing. As an example, in 2022, the amount awarded was $3.04 million, but the private investment in that same group of stations improving their facilities was $4.7 million. So $3.04 million in the grant funding and $4.7 million in private funding to upgrade facilities here in Minnesota. I believe we have a couple of testifiers, Madam Chair, and I'd like to hear from them now.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Anderson. Our first testifier is Brian Werner from Minnesota Biofuels Association. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi. Again, for the record, my name is Brian Werner, Executive Director of the Minnesota Biofuels Association. Minnesota has been aggressive in funding efforts to replace and upgrade retail gas station equipment to accommodate higher ethanol blends like E15. A fuel containing 15% ethanol that is commonly marketed as unleaded 88 due to its higher octane rating. As a result, last year we officially surpassed 500 retail stations that offer E15 in the state, or roughly 25% of the 2,000 stations statewide. We support House File 43 because it will continue investing in MDA's successful program and open up the program to a larger pool of small retailers. The benefit of E15 is that it costs less at the pump, reduces our reliance on fossil fuel, lowers greenhouse gas emissions, and supports farmers in our economy. As Representative Anderson just mentioned, according to data from the Minnesota Department of Commerce, E15 had an average price discount of 17 cents per gallon last year and saved Minnesota consumers over $20 million at the pump. Over the past 3 years, the program has provided 60 grants totaling $9.5 million, with grantees contributing another $11.6 million in matching funds. Those funds have helped broaden access to E15 and higher sales have followed. For 4 years running, annual statewide E15 sales have surpassed the previous year's baseline. And 2024 was another record-setting year with over 142 million gallons sold, an 11% increase from 2023. Now's a great time to double down on the program and continue our progress. A 2021 lawsuit by several oil companies created annual regulatory uncertainty about whether retail locations could offer E15 during the summer driving season. However, the federal EPA recently announced its plan to fully implement a rule allowing Minnesota, as well as seven other Midwestern states, to sell E15 year-round and permanently starting on April 28th. And legislation authored by Senator Klobuchar and Representatives Craig, Finstead, and Fischbach to provide this same regulatory certainty nationwide is gaining momentum in Congress. House File 43 will continue Minnesota's leadership and drive additional E15 sales to lower emissions, save consumers money at the pump, support the rural economy, and increase our energy security. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Warner. Do members have any questions for our testifier? Representative Hansen.
I'll wait till the end.
Until the end? Okay. Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious because Chair Anderson, you are increasing the number of retail sites. So I am curious to see how many more are eligible due to this change. And I guess if those who have already, I know that previous grants said that no more than 10 retail sites are eligible for this grant. And so if these previous grantees have already received the funding per this new change with the increased retail sites, can they reapply for this grant again? If assuming that they have, you know, grew from the 10 retail sites.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I understand your question. Are you asking if somebody with a smaller number of outlets had applied and didn't get funding, if they're now eligible because that number is increased? Is that what you're asking?
Yes, and if they did get funding, can they apply too? Assuming that after they got this grant, they have increased the number of sites, and can they reapply for this as well?
Chair Anderson?
I think you're asking, at a different site, could they apply? Yes, yes, they could.
Representative Vang? Anyone? All right. Thank you, Mr. Warner. Our next testifier is Amanda Billix from the Minnesota Corn Growers Association. Please state your name and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Amanda Billick. I'm the Senior Public Policy Director for the Minnesota Corn Growers Association. We represent nearly 7,000 family farms who grow corn. So I'm testifying today in favor of House File 43 as amended. Thank you, Chair Anderson and the co-authors for bringing this bill forward to support the Biofuels Infrastructure Program at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. As you just heard, the amended bill would help to open up the program to some more retail locations. Opening that up to retail locations that have 20 sites. We do think that this can help to increase some competition for program resources as well as improve the pool of applications. The testimony that you just heard from Mr. Werner and also with the comments from Chair Anderson really discussed the positive economic benefits that have resulted from this successful program. And last week, the committee heard a really positive report from the Office of the Legislative Auditor for the department's diligent implementation of the Biofuels Infrastructure Program. We really want to express our appreciation to MDA for their work to effectively steward these public resources that help to increase biofuel blending across the state of Minnesota. And Minnesota Corn Growers Association and Minnesota Biofuels Association submitted separate written testimony on that last week. Minnesota Corn Growers Association has nearly a 20-year history of biofuel investments, including marketing, outreach, infrastructure, and research. And about half of those total investments have been dedicated to marketing, outreach, and infrastructure initiatives in Minnesota. So we're very supportive of the Biofuels Infrastructure Program since it was first authorized in 2021. Has really helped to increase the amount of blending that's available for biofuels and helping to save consumers money. Creation of the state program was a recommendation from the Governor's Council on Biofuels. This was created by Governor Walz in 2019. And state-level funding for biofuels infrastructure is becoming even more important given some uncertainty at the federal level for a biofuel infrastructure program that was authorized in the Inflation Reduction Act. There was $500 million that was authorized in that federal program, and to date they've awarded $287 million to 345 projects across the country. But any future commitments are a little bit in question, which really kind of underscores the importance of state-level programs. The state-level program started before there was a federal program and helped to provide an assistance to retailers for increasing blending. So thank you, Chair Anderson, and the co-authors for your continued support of this program at the Department of Agriculture and bringing forward House File 43. We appreciate the opportunity to testify in support. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Billick. Do members have any questions for our testifier? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question's for Mr. Savory. Is the amount here the base, or is it above the base and the tails?
Mr. Savory?
Chair and members, the appropriation on line 1.6 is $4.5 million in each fiscal year. The base for this appropriation is $3 million. So this would be a $1.5 million increase above the base in the upcoming budgeting biennium. Members would note on line 1.15 and 1.16, the base returns to its original amount in future years in 2028-29 to $3 million.
Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this Representative Anderson is additional spending, is that correct?
Representative Anderson?
Was that a question?
Yeah, that was a question.
Yes, it is, Representative Hansen, and I think we all know that what happens on Thursday is going to play a big part in what happens with any funding bill here at the state, so stay tuned. These numbers are not written in stone, and again, a lot depends on what happens at the end of the week.
Representative Hansen?
Madam Chair, and Representative Anderson, you and I agree on that, that I think not only Thursday, but the consequences of the destruction of programs and projects and people at the federal level is going to have a consequence that we may not see until April or May or June. So what we find out on Thursday may not be the last word, and it does take people to run programs and what's happening at the federal level is not good for our state and not good for agriculture.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Frederick.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, do you know if the money that's been appropriated for this in the past gets eaten up every year? The money that this legislature has appropriated for this program in past years, because I've carried bills doing similar things to this in the past. So are you aware if all of those appropriations in each cycle get completely used?
Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good question. The best I can do without checking into it is to tell you that there are $3.5 million available for this latest round of grants in 2025. And the amount of spending allocated to those requests is about $11 million. So, again, I can go back, and your question has to do with how much money has actually been allocated compared to how much was the legislature put forward to the program, correct?
Representative Frederick?
Thank you. I guess where I'm going with this is that if we're opening up the potential applicant pool up to going from the 10 up to a 20, like if we are having issues with not enough applicants for the money in past years, so we need to open up the applicant pool more. But if we're using that, if that money has been used up more in previous years. And the intention of this program is really to target those smaller kind of mom-and-pop style shops. I'm trying to, like, figure out what the impact of this expansion will do statewide, if that makes sense.
Representative Anderson?
That's a good point, Representative. I think in the past, to maybe get at your question, the number of applicants has exceeded the number of projects awarded. In talking to people that work in the industry, it was their recommendation to increase this from, the bill here calls for 15, it had been 10, up to 20 now, to allow a chain that may have a location in an ideal spot to be eligible to apply for a grant such as this. I don't know the criteria for how these projects are selected. I do know in the last round that there were 3 in the metro area selected and 11 in what I would call outstate greater Minnesota. I would assume that we would continue having a balance in projects that are awarded, and I would trust the department to do their usual good job at determining who gets these grants and who are most able to use them and utilize them.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Representative Frederick, any other members have questions? Okay, seeing none. All right. Is there anyone else in the audience who would wish to testify for or against House File 43 as amended? Seeing none. Members, please note that we have written testimony from the Minnesota Farm Bureau and Fueling Minnesota. Written testimony from Growth Energy has also been emailed to us, and it's also posted to this meeting's website. Discussion on House File 43 as amended. Josh, to go first? No. Further discussion? So are you done? Do you have anything to say?
Ready to go.
Okay. Awesome. Okay, Chair Anderson, do you have any concluding comments on your bill?
Again, thanks, Madam Chair, and thanks for the questions. I'm going to look into that. And I would just also add, we had the Amanda Billick up here, and I don't think she mentioned this, but in the last biennium, Minnesota corn growers contributed $1 million to this program. So they put their money where they believe would do the most good. So I want to say thanks to them for that contribution as well. Madam Chair, again, this is a good program in supporting the rollout of E15 or E88 gasoline. My wife sometimes gets those mixed up, and it's E15, E88, the same good product to put in your vehicles. But I would renew my motion, Madam Chair, that this bill would be laid over in the Ag Committee.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. House File 43 as amended is laid over and will be considered for possible inclusion in a budget bill. This concludes our agenda for today. Our next meeting will be on Wednesday. And with that, we are adjourned.